It's time for the Biblical Prophecy Program with your host, Dr. Alan Kirshner of Eschatos Ministries.
Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of the Biblical Prophecy Program. So in today's show, I am going to explain the tenets of premillennialism. And there are a variety of premillennial views out there, including historic premillennialism or post-tribulation premillennialism. There's classical dispensational premillennialism. There's progressive dispensational premillennialism. And there's pre-wrath premillennialism. Of course, I would be in that group. So premillennialism is a historical temporal millennial interpretation that functions with a sequential framework. And in the last episode, I explained what I meant by historical temporal, because there are other views out there, like a thematic millennialism, that doesn't believe that the millennium is an actual historic period. And I'll be covering that in the near future. But it's the historical temporal millennial views are premillennialism, post-mill, and amillennialism. So premillennialism expects the following events to occur at the future parousia of Christ at some point, not necessarily at the very second that he returns. We have to understand the parousia is, a lot of people misunderstand this term. It's not some instantaneous event, nor is it some event that is going to last a day. It's actually going to last forever when Jesus returns. And, you know, it's an extended event. It's the same idea as there with Christ's first coming. There was an arrival, that was his birth, and then there's a subsequent presence, and he fulfilled purposes of the Father on earth, including just the very last event of the first parousia was the ascension, going up to heaven. Likewise, the second coming, the second parousia, will fulfill many events: deliverance of God's people, judgment with the trumpet, then the bowl judgments, of course, Armageddon, salvation of Israel, setting up the kingdom, and so forth. So, number one, the general resurrection of God's people will occur before or at the beginning of the millennium. Okay. Number two, Christ's victory at his parousia will result in the punishment of Satan being bound and incarcerated in the abyss for the millennium. That's a tenet of premillennialism. Number three, the parousia will establish the inauguration of the messianic millennial kingdom. Number four, there is a sequential chronological link between Christ's victory at the battle in chapter 19 and the binding of Satan establishing a thousand-year period in chapter 20, verses 1 through 3. Number five, the physical kingdom will be realized on earth for a period of 1,000 years, or as some other premillennial interpreters believe, the 1,000 years does not denote a literal 1,000 years, but represents an undetermined long period of time. So it could be 10,000 years. Number six, the messianic age will be characterized by the coexistence of non-resurrected and resurrected people. The identity of the non-resurrected is debated among premillennialists. For example, there are a variety of traditional premillennial interpretations on the exact nature of the future millennium, questions that really are outside the purview of this program right now. Number seven, the ultimate destruction of Satan will be delayed to the end of the millennium, associated with the Gog and Magog battle. At that time, the dead are raised and face the great white throne judgment. Number eight, the new heavens, new earth, and new Jerusalem are established at the beginning, during, or at the end of the millennium, depending on the interpreter. Now, that's number eight there. I want to note that there's more, there's becoming more of a trend, and I would attribute it to more the popularity of the pre-wrath, pre-millennial view. I think more interpreters are seeing that, no, the new heavens and the new earth and the new Jerusalem, they're not established at the end of the millennium, but at the beginning of it. In fact, this wasn't planned at all, but I actually just finished copy editing a book by Janet Willis. This is going to be out. You can't get this on Amazon as of today. I'm recording this February 7th, 2025. I think in about 2 weeks you'll be able to get this on Amazon. And this is a long, long-awaited book. What on Earth is Heaven Like? The New Creation and the New Jerusalem. Janet Willis. And I wrote the foreword to the book. And it's finished. And it's just now needs to be, you know, populated through the book distributors and be available out there in a couple of weeks. And this book is... I would say that this is the best book out there on the new creation and the new Jerusalem. So if you, pre-wrath, premillennialism, I believe is making significant original contribution to new creation, premillennialism. That's what I like to call it. New creation, premillennialism. And, she does a phenomenal job. This is why I wrote the foreword to the book. It's I highly recommend it. She does a phenomenal job in arguing that the new heavens, the new earth, and the new Jerusalem are established at the beginning of the millennium, not at the end. She's also done important original research. I should probably save all of this promotion stuff until the book is actually out there, but it's just to anticipate you guys, have you guys anticipate it coming out in a couple weeks. But she's done amazing original research showing that Ezekiel's city, like a lot of people focus on Ezekiel's temple. I get it. It's like what, eight chapters devoted to it. But also, Ezekiel also mentions a structural entity separate from the temple. He talks about the city. And it's quite interesting that she has demonstrated that the size of John's city, which is not the traditional size, this mammoth huge, you know, that's out of space and stuff like that. Rather, it's rather squared rather than multiplying the surface area. But anyway, that's all in the book. She has demonstrated that the size of the city. The size of the city in Ezekiel's city and John's city, it's the same size. And it's amazing. It's been there right before our eyes. And so people have always then thought that, you know, they've used that as an argument that Ezekiel's city and John's city are two different cities, and therefore the New Jerusalem must occur at the end of the millennium. Can't use that anymore. Janet Willis has had amazing breakthrough. And let me tell you, I, as an academic, I'm very cautious with terms like groundbreaking, breakthrough, because those are what sensational prophecy teachers do. And I don't like doing that. But this is truly groundbreaking material that she's doing. So anyway, the book is called What on Earth is Heaven Like? The New Creation and the New Jerusalem by Janet Willis. As of today, February 7th, if you're listening to this, you know, after February 7th, I suppose later in the month, you could find it on Amazon. But I will be promoting that book like there is no end to the millennium, if you will. All right. So, I know I belabored that point, but number eight, yeah, the new heavens, new earth, and the new Jerusalem are established at the beginning. And again, this is overall whether however you want to believe it as a premillennialist, it is distinctive because other views, for example, you have amillennialism, postmillennialism that believes that we're living in the new heaven and new earth right now. Okay. Wow. I mean, that's talk about just, you know, you're so blinded to your biblical theology that you don't even like there's no reality there in terms of looking outside. And, you know, I'm looking at the woods here and I saw some vultures the other day, you know, killing some or eating some dead carcass. I mean, anyway, that's a whole nother issue. And so this is key. Number eight. All right. Number nine. And this is the last one. At the end of the millennium, the eternal state commences. Now, there are, and let me just note here that there are literary parallels, by the way, in early Jewish apocalyptic literature for some of these ideas that I've talked about, these nine views, or nine tenets of premillennialism. And you could find some of that in there's an article. This here, yeah, J.W. Bailey, The Temporary Messianic Reign in the Literature of Early Judaism. That's in a JBL article there. But yeah, other features of premillennialism include viewing Old Testament messianic prophecies of an age of peace being fulfilled during this period. There's one interpreter that locates the premillennial interpretation within the, quote, prophecy fulfillment paradigm. In addition, premillennialism views the period just before Jesus' parousia pessimistically. It's characterized by evil, lawlessness, and expecting an antichrist figure who will rule the world as the desolating and deceiving agent of Satan. The transition from that period when humanity worships the beast to the messianic age when redeemed humanity worships Christ will be realized through the day of the Lord's wrath. Excuse me. I should note here that the historical premillennialism views the eschatological judgments occurring as a simple schema, typically within a single day or a brief period, while futurist premillennialists, such as myself, construe the judgments as realized as a complex schema of an extended period of time, especially through the trumpets and bowl judgments depicted in Revelation, climaxing in the Battle of Armageddon. In addition, the former view generally does not frame certain prophecies associated with the parousia within Daniel's 70th week time frame. That's why when I see people say, oh, I'm a historical premillennialist, and they also believe in Daniel's future 70th week, that's not historical premillennialism. Typically today, your historical premillennialists and traditionally have not affirmed a future 70th week of Daniel. But futurist premillennialists do. There's a lot of people who want to, they don't like the term dispensational, so they'll say, I'm a historical premillennialist, but they don't understand that the historical guys take historicist interpretations. They don't believe, many of them don't even believe in a future antichrist figure. So I don't think they understand the different historical premillennial views. Okay, so, and, you know, this is, a lot of this is in my book, A Linguistic Approach to Revelation chapter 19, verses 11 through 20, verse 6, and The Millennium Binding of Satan, a very expensive book, I apologize, but that's the nature of the academic books there. But, so, it's part of this, the justification for this book was to bring in, I brought in a new line of argumentation, a linguistic approach for the sequential framework. And there's never been an actual Greek analysis published on the millennial text in the book of Revelation, if you can imagine that. So my book is the very first one out there, the only one out there, as far as I know now. It's been out there for a few years. So I note that the literature supporting the sequential understanding does not include any robust, explicit, theoretical linguistic studies that cohesively links chapter 19, verses 11 through 21, with chapter 20, verses 1 through 6. So this book here, this linguistic proposal, I believe contributes to the literature on this topic, where, of course, I would hope that other interpreters can build upon. All right, so that's premillennialism, the nine tenets of premillennialism, roughly. You know, and of course, there's going to be, you know, there's, like I mentioned at the beginning, there's different varieties of premillennialism. So some people will emphasize other tenets over other ones. So, okay, and then I'm going to be addressing postmillennialism and amillennialism in the near future. And for those, just to let you guys know, this podcast is gaining quite a few recent listeners. If you want to learn more about the ministry, Eschatos Ministries, just go to alankirshner.com and you can check out our other resources. Thanks, guys, for listening.